I don't understand.
Someone has to sell the new idea to the Verts. Why not Jay? He's well known. He's one of my chief commanders. Let him be the public face.
Take the heat, you mean?
Once the Verts start grumbling, who do they blame? Jay. Who was the object of their hatred?
Jay.
Two birds, one stone. We get everything up and running, and we help seal his fate.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 38 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 38. The screenplay was done by James Wiley. It was directed by Ian Moon. And the episode synopsis read up by Tamsin.
Reality space gang wars spill out into the street as the city becomes hooked on the game, while Ram prepares to gain an instant army of workers by introducing a new pay-to-play scheme. Elsewhere, Jay and Ved both consider their futures in the techno-regime.
Ram, Java, and Ebony discuss the end of free access to the game, with credit now earned by a day of labour to maintain the power network, which has been severely stretched. Ebony, however, doesn't think the city will go for the no-pay, no-play chain gang scheme. The Ram brushes Ebony's concerns off. He later admits to Java that he shares her concerns. This leads to Ram deciding to use Jay to sell the new system to the city so they have a convenient scapegoat for any unrest. So yeah, a few different angles to talk about here in this opening. What do you make of the various viewpoints due to this new development of the pay-to-play scheme and the chaos that we witness in the city between the Reds and the Blues and the scenes of slave workers?
I'm just going to say this right now. You can't really call these guys slaves. We've seen slave labor in the tribe. I don't really count this as that because what they're doing is they're working to get a paycheck and it's their choice to use that paycheck to play the game.
Yeah.
So they're not working for free. They're not working against their will. I would not constitute this slave labor. That's just me. I don't throw that out there.
No, I agree with you, actually.
We'll rebuff that a little bit. Due to the abusive, addictive nature of the game, I hear you're completely right, like, technically, but I would call us them as slaves.
Isn't it just capitalism, though?
It's coercive. I'll give you that. Absolutely coercive.
It doesn't feel like slavery.
It's not slavery, but they are.
But it's not free will either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just capitalism, though, isn't it? They want access to this stuff. They've become hooked on it. And it's that consumerist, I have to have this. They don't actually have to have this.
No, they want to have this.
You know, Mouse and Sammy are not addicted, are they? They're not like Pride. They're not addicts, Mouse and Sammy. They could step away from this. We've seen them do other stuff than this, but they want it. So it's, I mean, Ram's just gone and rebooted capitalism.
And they're just working because they have no clue what a full day's work will entail. Especially Mouse, he's way too young to understand what that means. But they at least decide for themselves, okay, fine, we have to work and do stuff to be able to play this game, and that's a price we think we're willing to pay at this moment.
I do agree Lance has a point about the coercive element of it. I guess it just doesn't work for me as well because they haven't done a good job of showing the addiction of this game. So it's like we have people who are actually addicted and have been destroyed by exposure to this because they got extra attention, like Pride or someone like May, who was actually in there you know, hooked up for long periods of time, or the way Amber was affected by it. Everybody else, though, are just playing at will when they feel like it. So that doesn't feel so much like an addiction. It feels more like, in line with Hansen said, it's something they want. They can do other things,
yeah,
but there's really nothing else they'd rather be doing. And so for me, I feel like it's teetering the line on the whole addiction metaphor.
Yeah, if they would have shown the addiction better, it might have worked better.
Yeah.
Or at least it might have made more of an impression.
Because, I mean, they're addicted to this, like, kids in the 80s were addicted to TV. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
we won't die if we don't have it, but it's just like, what else? We don't have anything else to do. We want to watch TV, you know, but we were fine if we didn't have it, compared to an actual addiction where you are not fine if you don't have it.
I mean, honestly, I don't have major issues with pay to play, because, you know, plenty of people make their children do chores in order to give them Minecraft minutes.
I'm gonna ask a question though. Do you guys think it's a bit early to introduce pay to play, since the game has only recently gone online?
Yeah. I think it would have worked better if they got them hooked more truly, but
yeah.
And this is exactly the problem we talk about, the addiction, because we've already got now fights going out across the whole city between the two opposing teams already. Like, it's just launched. And now they're fighting each other, full control of the city for turf wards, whilst also doing the getting the tokens they need to continue playing. It's just, it's rushed. It is absolutely rushed.
It's sloppy.
Yeah.
It's very sloppy in the storytelling to go from, you know, two episodes ago, we were worried about getting everyone even stand to play, you know, and like, Lance just said, all of a sudden we've got kids wearing bandanas in the streets asking if you're a crypt or a blood, and it's like, ready to fight if you're at the wrong place without a bandana on. And it's just like, okay, what? It's been 2 days. You know, I get that these kids would really love doing this, but I mean, I've seen game addictions with, you know, my kids, my nieces, my nephews, self. And it takes a little longer for it to get in your system. Even though, granted, I will give it a pass just because these kids literally have nothing fun to do.
Yeah.
So they latch onto this. But it's sloppy. It's very sloppy. And but I won't say it's too fast, because for me, in the span of the season, it feels like finally the Technos are doing something, you know, towards their greater plan that I find interesting that affects the whole city. So I was just like, bring it, just please, thank you, do something. You know, there's a lot of meandering going on. And so I'm just like, okay, finally, a step in the Technos regime that is affecting the city in a negative way, you know, like on a whole scale, rather than just pockets of negativity that only a few people know about. And like, I'm just glad to be seeing them do something that's literally affecting the whole city.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, for me, it's, every time I watch this show, I keep thinking, okay, but it feels like more time should have passed. But then they pull out something different, and it's like, okay, so no time has passed.
Yeah. So this is the reality of time for God.
That's like, on one hand, Ved would not have recovered overnight magically completely. Yet, with the moment Pride was gone, and Pride came back in the morning, there was no time between that. So it can't have been longer.
Well, see, that's the magic of it. Ambiguous injuries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, remember, Ved was in reality space when he was injured. We don't know how that actually affected him in the real world. Like, how is he physically injured? Was he just very sore, worn out by what happened? And we have no idea. Is there nerve damage? Is there a shock to your system when you're hit in the game? We don't know. They're so ambiguous about it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's bad off enough, he needs to go to hospital, but the next morning he's fine. So what, did he just need a nap? Maybe that's all he needed. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know.
Yeah, just some electrolytes and he's fine.
He's fine.
Can I say...
I can't with this timeline.
Can I just say, I had a bit of a jump scare when Jay Ryan appeared, as I think he was a red, and I was like, oh my god. Because for fans of the tribe may or may not be aware, Okay, so Jay Ryan was in the soap opera Neighbours, and his romantic partner in Neighbours was Michelle Ang. She played his girlfriend. So he's in this and about to go off and do Neighbours, where they'll be united, and the reason why we don't get Tyson back. But that's another story. But I was like, oh my God, it's Jack Scully.
I wish the conversation between Ram and Ebony had been a little more beefed up, because I do like that they're having a conversation, and that Ebony's just pointing out her history with the city, how people may not respond positively to being told they now have to pay for something that was previously free to them. That's a fair concern. But I do wish she had gone into more detail, bring some of her actual experience in running the city, or even just being in the tribe that's running the city. Because again, Ebony has been a city leader. She's always been trying to control the city. Even when she was only on the sidelines and having to suffer under the Mallrats' leadership, that's what she's done. She has seen so many examples of trying to get the city kids to do what you want them to do. And I would have loved if she brought up something from like season two, you know, the trouble with, yeah, we saved their lives with the, you know, the antidote, and they still gave us issues when we were trying to tell them what to do, to work together and stuff like that. And that's with life-saving medicine. And I just think there was more she could have said to express what her experience of knowledge of the city kids is coming from, you know. But again, they never gave you enough to say, you know.
It's like the whole money system didn't happen either. It's like, you've got all this knowledge to pull back on, but nothing.
I mean, the conversation can still go the same way with Ram naysaying her.
Yeah.
But it would make more sense if, when she's not in the room, he admits to Java, she may have some points, you know. Those are concerns I have too. This could go badly and we're suddenly the bad guys. You know, we've worked to win the hearts of the people. We've made them forget that we still have their family members and their friends. I think we've made them forget all about what's being done to them, where they've been taken, all of that stuff. Don't want to lose that, because he obviously has an agenda. He needs the city to do what he's asking them to do. And I just think it'd be a little more beefed up if Ebony had really given him something to think about with her experience in this city.
Yeah.
But I do like the moment with he and... Wait, is that this moment? No, it's not. Never mind. It's later, so forget it. But yeah, I just would have liked more words. And I also like Ram's idea of using Jay. Finally, utilize this guy. You can't stand him. He's been a pain in your butt. He doesn't do his job. He never knows what's going on because he never shows up for work. He just shows up in the hotel to complain that he doesn't know what's going on. And he doesn't like what he just found out, blah, blah, blah. So it's nice to see Ram being like, you know what? I have finally decided to have to deal with him.
And it factors into something that Sabine's been saying the entire time, that Jay's the poster boy for the technos.
Yeah, he's the face. And you can either use that for good or for bad.
And now we have that confirmation.
And yet we don't ever see it in the show.
No, we don't.
Literally don't ever see him being the poster boy.
He became that because everybody in the fandom spent 20 years trying to figure out why Jay was a techno, why Ram kept him around. You know what I mean? So it was just like, he must have been there because he was a good PR or something. Like, why else would he have taken this guy on?
Yeah, he looks pretty in a picture.
The tribal warfare it's all right. It's just, the problem is we've seen tribal warfare done better in the city. So for me, I don't even think of it that way. It's just lightweight kids running around. Well, what is that game the kids love to play? But anyway, it feels not as threatening, you know what I mean? It doesn't really feel like tribal warfare. It feels like middle schoolers playing at the Bloods and the Crips. You know what I mean? Like, I can talk from experience, because when I was in middle school, that was all rage. And I remember, like, kids walking around with bandanas hanging out their pocket and start beef with each other, you know, over the bandana, you know. And we're just a bunch of poor kids living in the suburbs, thinking we're West Coast. It's just so stupid. And that's all this reminded me of. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't gangs. These are just unruly poor kids obsessed with their new video game. They're just LARPing. They're taking their LARPing very seriously.
Yep.
I mean, Lex is able to chase off a whole bunch of them. Come on. If they were serious, they could have easily jumped him. They're disruptive, at best. They're disruptive. The hoodlums. But I mean, when we remember what tribal warfare in the city actually looked like, when you had to really run for your life if one of the tribes came around, you know, like, this is whatever.
It feels like it's tribal warfare by kids who weren't big enough to fight in the demon dogs versus locos versus jackals sort of fight. Because it's like, have you learned nothing? This is not how you play at warfare. It's like, you've had so many better examples of how to fight with another gang. It feels more like paintball than anything else.
Yeah. And does. I don't know if that's what they're going for. They clearly want us to take it seriously by having a lot of the characters very bothered by this disruption, by kids running around with their bandanas and just causing trouble. But it's not, you can't take it seriously because they're not really causing that much trouble. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen way, way worse. In this season, we've seen way worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen them throwing rocks at their city leader. Like, you can see they're doing anything, but, you know, walking around thinking they're important, but they're not doing anything, you know? So it's like, are we supposed to take this seriously as a massive problem?
What about Chloe?
What about her?
You want to protect her, I know that.
What are you getting at? You saying I could protect her better at the mall? You mean you want me to be some vert lover like you? I ain't cut out for that.
Can't you at least stay here until you're completely better? Ved, these people fixed you up. Aren't you even slightly grateful?
I appreciate the help, but I don't belong here. I gotta go back.
Just do me a favor, huh? Think about what I said. Just think about it. For me.
While Ved is amused by Jay's suggestion that he go to the mall instead, he does, however, drop in on Jay and Celine to let them know that the numbers of people playing the game are much lower than Rand believes. Celine is encouraged by this, and Jay agrees that if Ved left the Technos, it will be a big win, but he's not optimistic that this will happen. See, panel, what do you make of this scene between Jay and Ved? Especially the possibility of Ved joining the Morats, and how he provided information to the Rebels.
Can I just say, I think Ved has been more used to the Rebels in this one scene than Jay has been in these 37 and a bit episodes.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing when Celine actually says, "You think mm-hmm. come over to our side?" I was like, "I bet she's hoping because he would be way more used to you than his brother, who's hanging around and has done nothing for you guys at all, except tell you what he can't do. That's all Jay has said. They say what he can't do to help you." You know, every time they ask Jay, do you think blah, blah, blah? He's like, Ram doesn't listen to me. I don't have any power. Like, what can you do? Why did you join us, dude?
Ved would have been a great asset to them, honestly.
Yeah. Completely. It's always Selena. I'd be like, go convince your brother.
A really interesting character as well to throw into the mix.
I will say these two scenes with Jay and Ved, I don't want to shade these actors. Okay, they're working with what they've been given to work with, but these scenes convinced me that we lost the better actor in Ved because he's the most compelling character in these scenes with Jay. I could feel an undercurrent of emotion in Ved as he's talking to his brother that I cannot feel for Jay. Jay's words. Or saying he's concerned for Ved's safety, he wants him away from Ram. Ram is dangerous, but he's not conveying that emotion. I don't believe him. But when Ved is talking to him, I feel something. Like Ved is dealing with like a conflict. You know, he seems warned by the fact that his brother wants him safe, but Ved has a different agenda. He has a different goal, and he knows what he has to do to achieve that goal. He's got to go back to Ram. To find Chloe, that he knows that Ram had something to do with Chloe going missing, and he's never going to find her if he, you know, cuts off that avenue of information. You know, like, Ved conveys all of that, and even when he pops into frame during Celine and Jay's conversation, which is hilarious that they didn't see him coming up the stairs, but whatever. He just slides into the chair. Even in that scene, he's conveying more information. Like, there's so much you can speculate as to what Ved's thinking when he brings them this information, you know, because he didn't have to. Why would he bring them this information? You know, it hints that he himself isn't 100% on board on the direction this is going because Ram crossed the line with him, you know, and because otherwise, like, why would you give them information that they could use to sabotage Ram's plan? You know, all I could think is we lost the better actor. I'm very sorry to James Napier.
And it says so much about Ved as a character. He's willing to give this info to the mall rats, to the other side, yet he's going back because Ram still has Chloe. And he knows fully well that there's no way these mall rats are going to manage to get Chloe back without him going back to Ram.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for the past 37 episodes, he's seen how bad these mall rats are at getting any one of their tribe back. Like, yeah, sure, they managed with Amber. That's about it. So he knows it's hopeless to go over to their side and, I guess, sit around and hold hands and wait to see if Chloe magically turns up again. Like, he wants to do something.
His brother's a general. Mm-hmm. Celine's the supposed city leader.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's the most useful.
Absolutely useless. Right. And I even like how he says, like, he's not even bothered by the fact that Ram attacked him. He's just like, I know him better than you do. You know, like, he gets it. He understands how all of this happened. I will say, I can honestly say Ved's more of a man of action than most of our characters.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy. It's so crazy that I have to say this. But, I mean, he does what he says he's going to do. He means what he's going to do, you know. But yeah, he's a jerky boyfriend. He's a bully. He's a lot of things. But his better qualities are incredibly strong. And again, he reminds me of an earlier Lex. He's an incredibly compelling character, you know, that you want to know more about. You want to follow him. You want to see where his journey is going to take him. You want better for him. You want him to become better, you know?
And like Lex, he's a difficult character because he's quite morally gray. Like, he's done some bad stuff. He's not a nice person. That's what makes him interesting. That Chloe is the one, his relationship with Chloe is the thing that he's prepared to sacrifice basically everything for. That's really interesting. That, like you say, that is compelling. But I was going to say, does anybody else think it's strange that I now feel more compelled by the relationship between Ved and Chloe now that Chloe's not around anymore than I did when she was there?
I know, that's what's so crazy. It's like they didn't have a good relationship at all. Right?
No.
But it's so reflective of how Lex was with Zandra in season 1. They had a great relationship, but the thing Lex was willing to do to make it work, to keep her, you know, even though he was still such a terrible boyfriend and a terrible person to everybody else, right? Like, it was compelling to think that what he was willing to do to keep this girl, you know, the games to play and all of that. You're like, why? You don't even seem to like her. Like, why do you do these things? But that's compelling to watch because it hints at something deeper in a person that you want to know about, you want to understand.
I think at this point it's safe to say I never felt before this season, before this rewatch, I never felt like Ved was a decent character or even one worthy of, you know, any positive attention. And this season, this rewatch has just turned that around for me. Because now I actually don't really hate Ved.
Yeah, I do. I get the Ved love. I mean, I'm never going to like him, like, as a person.
No.
Yeah.
But I do like the character. I'm interested. You got me. I'm interested. I mean, and this isn't me saying, oh, if someone came back, they'd be magic. No, they'd still probably be a hot mess because they're 14. But I'm interested.
Well, we wanted to see more.
It's such a shame, though. I mean, we lost a good actor playing an interesting character. It's so disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't see these things. without feeling disappointed, because you know what's coming, and it's just disappointing. Like, the whole thing is disappointing.
I mean, Ved is more upset about Chloe, a girl he barely knows, mm-hmm. his first crush, and a girl he treats like crap. He's more upset about her disappearing.
He's more upset about her than her surrogate mother was.
Her whole family is just like, eh. But Ved's like, I got a plan. I'm going to execute my plan to get to her, find her, you know? And if that means I got to play nice with Ram, that's what I'm going to do, you know?
If it means playing nice with these Verts and with Celine, sure.
But see, he doesn't even have to play nice with them. They are not the key to getting Chloe. So that says that he's motivated by something completely different to give them information. It's not about Chloe. I mean, you could say he's motivated by his feelings for Chloe, and this is her family.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, you know, olive branch. But he doesn't have to in order to get Chloe. That's the important thing. He doesn't have to help them out. He doesn't have to be nice to them, because there's nothing they can do to help him get her.
I wonder, though, if he would have found Chloe. Like, if we would have been allowed to keep Chloe, and if he... Let's just say this storyline wasn't just pulled out of someone's magical thumb. It... Like, if this story would have actually been planned, and he would have, you know, fought his way to get Chloe and actually would have gotten her back, I wonder what he would have done then. Would he have safely gotten her back to the Mall Rats? Or would he have stayed with the Technos, knowing that at any given moment, Ram could throw another hissy fit and make her disappear?
I will touch on that when we get to that segment, but I like where you're going there.
So Pride continues to go AWOL from the mall in search of his next fix, despite being frustrated by the new pay-to-play rules. Celine suspects him of playing the game, but he won't talk to her, instead making out that he's concerned for May, who is still struggling with her addiction, though this appears to worry Celine for an altogether different reason. So yeah, the cracks in Celine and Pride's relationship, how do you view it?
No, I was just saying, their whole relationship has been one big crack.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, this is it. Forget about the reality-based addiction. This relationship has gone exactly the way we all thought it was going to go. And it was, like, telegraphed from the beginning. They're, like, Pride is just a terrible boyfriend. He is a terrible boyfriend. And also, I hate the way that they frame that Celine is now jealous of May. This is somebody, like, May and Celine have got a really complicated relationship, like, seriously complicated. But the thing about it is, for a long time, May was, like, Celine's only friend in the mall, right? When a lot of stuff was going down, May was there for her. And it's her, May being back in the mall, is framed as this, oh my God, he's going to go back to her situation. And it's just, oh God, it just reminds you of how misogynistic it was in the 2000s. Because, yeah, and especially in the tribe, where it's just playing girls off against each other. And for what? For pride? Pride is the prize? Are you for real? Pride! He's not a prize! Sorry, I had to get my pride hate in. I couldn't let it go without saying, I hate pride.
Really?
I know, it's such a surprise. Plot twist.
This is news to me.
Every moment that we spend with these two is depressing, and it's hard because Celine is she's not a like most of Celine's storylines are either infuriating or you hate her or it's really depressing. She never gets any sort of fun or light storylines. Like a lot of the characters, they do get a chance to have some fun, but all of Celine's relationships, the relationship she has with, well, whatever you want to call it, with Bray, the relationship she has with Ryan, now with Pride, they're so negative. Like, it's just negative Nellyville. And I'm just, oh my God. if she gave up men. That's all I want to say, you know? Just...
I find it interesting. I thought it was a nice mirror from him coming in and her suspecting that he was off, you know, playing the game and asking, like, where you been, you know? And he's just like, oh, I just needed to get out, blah, blah, blah. And she knows he's lying to her. And it's not an easy thing to confront when your partner is not being honest with you, especially when you're young. It's difficult at any age, especially if you yourself are not a confrontational person. It's the middle of the night, you know? And just seeing her lay there, I'm like, how many times did we see Ryan in this exact position with her?
Yeah.
Knowing he couldn't trust her, knowing she wasn't being honest with him about mm-hmm. things, and just laying there in bed, like, frustrated and not sure what to do. You know, what else can I do? How better can I be? You know, so that was just an interesting mirror to see her, those positions flip like that. I don't like the tone of her being jealous of May's presence any more than you do, Tamsin. But I will say it does make sense in this situation because Pride has given her no security in their relationship.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, the last time there was a woman that he had a previous relationship in with, came into the mall. Look at the way he treated her, you know? And so it's like, why should Celine feel secure with May around?
Yeah.
Because of Pride. Not so much May being the problem, but because Pride is the problem. She's not secure with Pride. You know, she knows how wibbly wobbly he is all the time. Even at the best of times, even when there isn't another love interest around, their foundation's rocky. She really never knows where she stands with this man. He's not honest with her. he just comes and goes with the wind. He has a habit of snapping on her when she is confronting him with things he doesn't want to hear. So yeah, seeing him hovering over May, I can understand why Celine has a plethora of emotions of, great, what is this going to bring? What extra mess is this going to bring into our already messy relationship?
Yeah.
You know, they just never had a chance to find any solid ground. So, yeah, I don't like it either that, again, it's another external conflict in the shape of a female. But I at least understand why Celine would have it, given who she's dating right now.
Mm. And I think you make a really interesting point as well when you say about the mirror. Between the relationship with Ryan and Celine and then Celine and Pride. Because I think you're right. Celine has flipped over and she is the Ryan in this relationship dealing with the addiction of her partner or the mental health of her partner, which was the position that Ryan was in. And there's something you can explore with that if you wanted to. There's an interesting strand that you could pull on as a writer, because that's fascinating stuff. She's been the addicted partner and now she's the one having to cope with that. It's all really interesting, and yet no, we're not going to do that. We're just not. But like you say, her paranoia is also granted because he's always keeping these women that aren't Amber at either arm's length or as a placeholder in case Amber ever changes her mind. Like you say, he never makes May or Celine feel secure. And he drops the L-bomb whenever he feels like they might leave him. It's just red flags.
Back at the hotel, Fred psychs himself up and struggles to be civil to Ram, but ultimately chickens out of leaving the Technos.
She's my girl and I'm going to be with her.
Yeah. Sure you are, if you find her, which I hope you do.
And as far as the Technos go, well, I'm gonna
Yes, Ved, are you trying to tell me something?
No.
Are you still committed to the cause? I need to know I can trust you.
Yes, you can trust me.
Leaving Jay on his own when he announces that he won't be Ram's slave master and will be leaving with Ved. With Ram about to pass sentence, he starts showing symptoms of Ebony's cold and is led away by Java, while Ved silently urges Jay to flee. So yeah, how did you react to Ved's attempt to leave the Technos and Jay's big statement?
I'm going to say that this whole section here was the bit that made me enjoy this episode, because I really like seeing, again, the interpersonal stuff with the Technos. that's always the most fascinating thing that has come out of season four, I think, so far, is their interpersonal relationships and the way they are with one another. And it's always fascinating. And I just like the way Fed was on the point of doing it and then pulled back. That was really interesting. And yeah, for me, this interplay raised this episode up, because until this point, it was all quite boring. And then we got to here and I was like, oh, this is really interesting because these feel like characters again.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I liked Ved's conversation with Ram. And again, it's a lot of fuel for Chloe Ved shippers. I'll give them that. You know, like, there's a lot to fuel the romanticization of that relationship with what Ved's doing now, how hard he wants her back, what he's willing to do to get her back, the way he is willing to brush off Ram practically killing him in virtual reality, because it's necessary. Ram is the key to getting Chloe. He only loses his temper once, and that's when he says Chloe's name. And then you get the sense that, yeah, he wanted to tell him, like, when I get Chloe back, we're leaving. But he can't, because he needs to stay on Ram's good side at this moment. He needs to have a trust between them if he's going to get information that he desperately wants out of Ram. He's got to play nice. I liked that. I liked that almost slip of him almost saying it. Like, I'm taking her away. And why wouldn't he? As Sabine had mentioned earlier, why would he feel safe having her there? Before he probably did wanted to join the Technos. But now he knows that she wouldn't be safe. Like, at any time, Ram could just use her as a plaything and take her away if he was upset, Ved. You know, that sense that she wouldn't be safe, I wouldn't be safe, we'd be living with that all the time. Mm-hmm. If I want to be with her, maybe the only way I can is to join her tribe or just leave with her, get away from this guy. So I really liked that. I liked the way the actor played that.
And there's a true realization for him that, sure, he could tell Ram that as soon as I get Chloe, I'm gone. But he's smart enough to realize that the moment he would say that to Ram, there's no way he's seeing Chloe again.
He's moving in the shadows. I approve. never let your opponent know your next move, you know? You smile while you empty the bank accounts. You know what I'm saying?
He's one of the smarter characters when it comes to things like this. I don't believe I'm saying that.
Well, that's how you write intelligence in a character.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's also one of the very few who would actually go this far to try and get their girl back, instead of just sit in a corner, cry about it, and whine and do nothing, really.
I have to say something about Jay's audacity. Like, I don't know if I like it, but I do think it was bold making the statement. I quit. And Ved's coming with me. I think it would work more if Jay had shown more concern from his brother up until now. You can't just put it in one episode and think that I'm convinced he actually cares about his brother. But if they had actually really put the energy into peppering his care for Ved, you know, even implying that his staying with the Technos has a lot to do with Ved, on and on, then it would land better when he's just like, I'm leaving and Ved's coming with me. Because the way it is, it almost seems like he forgets they had a conversation and Ved was like, no, not leaving the Technos. He says it as though they did have a conversation and Ved was on the fence or something. It's like, so it doesn't really land as well as it could have if they've been building to his concern is his brother. He wants to get his brother to safety. He's only been putting up with all this because of his brother, blah, 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 or whatever. But,
okay, dude. This really annoyed me. It's like, this just shows how inept and stupid Jay is. Like, what did he expect the reaction and outcome was going to be for suddenly saying, I quit and I'm taking Ved with me? Like, Jay, I don't know.
It's like he's trying to tell Ram he's taking away his candy.
What's he think? He just walk away? I don't get it. I don't understand. Do you not know Ram by now? What do you think was going to happen? And
it speaks to his self-importance. He needed to make a show of quitting. He needs to say it to Ram's face. You know, and it's just like, dude, you already said you quit the technos ages ago. You don't show up. You're here reluctantly. Just don't come back. But no, he needed to look Ram in the face. It's like he was hoping this would leave some sort of impact on Ram. Like, you're losing me. Okay, dude, you are not the brains of this family.
I was going to say, was he expecting Ram to go, no, Jay, don't go. I need you.
That's right. I want you to know I quit. I'm doing what you want me to do. And it's like,
oh, God.
Just don't show up. It's really that simple.
Would they notice, though? Because he's hardly ever there. Would they notice?
That's my point. That's what it feels like. He just needs to make a show of it. You know?
And doesn't he just know by now that Rem doesn't need him anymore? He can just use his image.
He never did.
let's
be frank.
Yeah, but that's like not even as the poster boy anymore, because, you know, he can do that digitally.
Which he never does, and that really bugs me, because this Technos thing, they're constantly bringing up really cool things they could do with the tech that would solve many problems and make Ram an even more formidable villain, and they don't use them.
I didn't even thought about that. That's true. He could have just digitally used Jay anyway.
Yeah.
But it would have been a more interesting version of Jay.
Oh,
so
stop.
They couldn't do that, because it would have been, like, even digitally programmed by Ram. Jay would have been really exciting.
Yeah, fair enough. People would have noticed the difference straight away, because Jay isn't that awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
But people would have seen that difference. Unlike, you know, the other way around, with Amber saying things Amber would never say. Jay is so boring, people would instantly have to spot that he suddenly wasn't boring anymore. It's very hard to write someone that boring, especially for someone like Ram.
But yeah, the interpersonal relationships is what makes the scene interesting, you know. Knowing that there's a lot more going on behind everyone's eyes and in their heads. But honestly, Ved's the most interesting part. He's the most interesting person in the room. But I'd like to think, and I'm giving Jay some credit, maybe he doesn't deserve it, but I'd like to think that Jay understood in that moment that his brother wasn't betraying him, like that his brother has a reason for staying behind, especially the line he says, like, about true love winning out.
Mm-hmm.
He says it sarcastically, but I'd love to believe that he actually means that earnestly. Like, he gets why his brother is staying and isn't like, butt hurt that his brother hasn't joined him. He's acting like that he's offended that Jay, that Ved's not joining him, but actually gets it. I'd love to think that that's what's happening there. I don't know
that's
if that's what's happening.
Interesting, because I didn't read the true love as in your true love for Chloe. I read it as in the true love between Ram and Ved.
That's how I saw it, yeah.
You know.
But,
well,
you can read it either way,
yeah.
Ram doesn't
you can.
Fed. Fed's his favorite.
Yeah, and I, yeah.
Attributing, that would be me attributing a lot more emotional intelligence to Jay. And yes, I've written him that way in fan fiction, but I can't say that the show has written him that way, of having that emotional intelligence.
Let's not forget the guy who gets his ass routinely slapped by Ram. So that might be in this as well. You know.
I mean, Jay seems so clueless about so much. And his self-preservation skills are botchy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But it'd be nice to be able to read it that way, that he actually gets it in that moment. Yeah, maybe he is a little hurt, but he at least understands that his brother's not choosing Ram over him. He's choosing his objective, which is getting his girl. And says something sarcastic to cover up the fact that he gets it. You know? Almost like he's covering for Ved. That'd be a lovely thought. I don't know if that's
comfy.
It just sucks because the show treats Jay caring for Ved as a plot point that comes and goes when it's convenient, to make Jay seem more human and like a decent person. Like, whenever they need that, they'll make it, they'll bring up the dead girlfriend, or they'll make him Ved, he's concerned about Ved, you know, but most of the time he's not, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. What do you make of Ram not being able to pass sentence? I'm not a fan of how it was handled.
It was a stay of execution, wasn't it?
I don't want to talk about Ram's so-called illnesses and whatever the frick is wrong with him. It just annoyed me when he started sneezing, and I was just like, oh, here we go. Here we go. With this. We're going to commit to the fact that this guy is actually sick and has a compromised immune system that will be miraculously cured next season. And it pisses me off as soon as we get to this point. Whereas before, it was just, he has a phobia. He has an issue. He's a hypochondriac. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I buy that. But then they try to infer over and over again that it's actually dangerous for him to be around. He's blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you're really going for this? You're really going to go for this? Only to reverse? Just thinking about it really pisses me off, knowing where this Ram gets sick storyline's going.
Yeah, I just can't get that storyline.
He reminds me a bit of me at the moment, because obviously I'm still waiting for the operation, so I've got a mask up. And if anybody in the office has got a cold or something, I look at them like I really dog them up. I'm like, how dare you? How dare you come into my presence? You know?
I know what that feels like. It's if Ram was really that susceptible to something like cold, he'd wear a mask. He would not have scolded Java for trying to keep Ebony away with her cold.
No.
Well, see, he was introduced in a mask. And
if
they had been consistent, instead of trying to be vague about whatever it is going on with Ram, if they had just committed from the start and actually explained what was going on with him, I would be okay with it for the most part until season 5. And I actually don't have a problem with him hating it whenever Java or Steve fawn over him. Because if you are chronically ill, sometimes it's tiresome constantly reminding you of that. It's almost like it becomes your identity. And with his ego, I understand why Ram would be offended by it. Like, sometimes he loves their care and their consideration, and other times it's like, stop reminding me that I'm sick. If I want my favorite wife on her in here, I don't care. You know what I mean? And other times he's just like, thank you for looking out for me, you know, or whatever. So I do buy that from him, not wanting to accept dangerously ill times. It's just the whole sickness storyline is poorly done. It's garbage.
I wish it was done better.
Yeah, because also, like you say, with the fawning over, but then there's also this element of maybe him wanting some normality as well. Because like you say, when you're chronically ill, you're treated like it. Yeah, exactly. So maybe with Ebony, he gets the opportunity to pretend that he's okay when he actually isn't. But again, the writing isn't there. The writing's not there for any of this stuff.
Because Ebony doesn't know he's chronically ill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's never, she still has no idea what his deal is. She just thinks he's paranoid. You know, because there was a conversation between her and Java. Where, you know, Java's implying, like, you can't be around him. And Ebony just doesn't get it. Like, she just thinks it's out of jealousy or whatever. She doesn't know that Ram is susceptible to catching whatever she has. And it wouldn't just be a simple cold or flu for him if he caught it, you know? Ebony would make him feel normal. And that can mean he put himself in dangerous situations because he wants that normality when he's around her, you know? Because she doesn't look at him like he's sick, you know? And, but again, the whole storyline is done so badly. And then again, they just reverse it in the next season. It's just like, you can't take it seriously. It's just frustrating and it makes me angry.
I think that's the most annoying part about it. That because they change the way he is in the next season, it kind of makes fun of, you know, people that are actually that susceptible to illnesses.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if they could just get over it, if they improve their attitude, they won't be ill anymore.
Yeah,
but it's definitely in keeping with the show, because they tend to treat stuff like this and mental health the same way. You know, just knuckle up. You'll get over it. You'll be fine. They've been doing this since season 1.
To be fair, That's what most people do to people who are chronically ill and don't look it on the outside.
I mean, you know, Celine, she dealt with all her mental illnesses by just taking a stroll in the wilderness mm-hmm. and deciding I need to stop. She's fine. She's not struggling with any of it. Trudy, same thing. I mean, they were never clear what was going on with Trudy. You know, was it hormones? Was it was she actually going through some stuff? Because one day she just decided she wasn't going through it anymore. And you're like, what? She just needed a nap? Was that it? Like, okay, fine. The show was always treated. I think the only one they were ever serious with it was Lex. Like, what he was going through after Zandra's death. They actually treated that seriously. The depression he was in. And that it was a struggle. It wasn't about him just deciding one day to get it together. Because even when he wanted to get it together, he still fell back sometimes. He was struggling. And it was the only time they've ever really treated it seriously.
Yeah, that's because it's grief. And grief is dealt with differently than chronic illness.
I'm talking about mental health.
Or mental health
issues. I'm just talking about across the board with all of it, you know, of how they handle these things.
Yeah.
You know, and Lex is the only time that they ever treated it with any sort of real seriousness. That it can't just be cured overnight because a person decided that you're okay now, you know.
Subject of Lex, did anyone notice that he's forgotten how to read again?
It was very casual. Like, when did he and Seema have that conversation? That was interesting. He was just like, what does it say? Like, that was a big deal once upon a time for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now
I thought he could read again now, though.
He's still dyslexic. Dyslexic. It's just...
he still has trouble. And big words, small words. But he was just casually like, what does it say? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, okay, play. And he's like, oh. And I was like, wow, that is interesting. Like, that's always been an issue for him. And suddenly it's not. It's the most casual way they've referred to his illiteracy ever.
Hey, at least they remembered.
Yeah, that's true.
It was actually kind of a nice moment. I would have loved to see how he and Seema got there.
Glee, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, this could have been such a great moment. Like, we delve into Lex's actual feelings for Seema. Like, how he can be so open with her. Like, just tell her, just like that. And she not even care about it. That could have been a fantastic moment between the two. But no.
Yeah.
It's just thrown away. Okay. Like, this show.
You're just like, does she know? Wow, okay. I would have loved to see the struggle of him admitting that to her and her not being bothered by it and him being relieved because he's lived with the shame of it for so many years about wanting the woman he loves to know that about him. And he's found one who's just like, cool beans, whatever. It's cool, you know? I mean, yeah, it was just like, this could have been a great moment between them because it's actually really beautiful when you consider it, but there's no build-up to it. Like, when did... Was this ever a conversation?
Missed opportunity.
Yeah, press the button. Yeah.
Because she's not surprised when he says, what does that say? I mean, it's literally very, very short words, you know, that he could have sounded out. But you'd expect her to be like, oh, you can't see the screen, baby? Your eyes blurry? Anything. Nothing. She's just like, oh, it says this. And puts her arms around it. And he's just like, oh. And he's not bothered by having to ask her to read it to him. Like, there's nothing. And you're just like... Let's get here.
I mean, it's especially interesting because the other scene that they were in, he was essentially the first scene we saw them together in when they were in the cafe, he was calling her a nag. Then they'd kind of made it up when they were out in the marketplace. And now we've reached this moment of like good relationship vibes with him opening up to her so casually about this issue that he's got. I mean, it's a roller coaster between those two.
Speaking of Seema, I just wanted to bring this up. Another missed opportunity that I really wish they'd delved into. Okay, they go from Seema coming into the mall and there's maybe 2 days of friction because she doesn't know how to people suddenly and blah, blah, blah. Okay, and all of a sudden she's a trad wife. All right, fine. I actually don't have a problem with Seema being a trad wife, but I think it could have worked better if they'd actually explored why she leans into this so hard. Like, Seema is a survivor by nature, and she wants to be safe. She wants to be secure. She wants people who'll care for her. She wants a roof over her head, all that jazz. What if she was leaning, like overcompensating so these people don't throw her out? Because she knows Lex won't come with her. Because it's like the way he talked to her. You know, he made it very clear. If my family doesn't want you, you're on your own. And I'm not leaving. This is my home. You know, what if that's what Seema was doing? Overcompensating to secure her place here. She's cooking, she's wearing freaking aprons, she's cleaning, she's talking to Mouse like she's her mother in such a gentle way. And where are you going, young lady?
Yeah.
I'm to wash you up. She's being super friendly to everybody. It's like, what if that was her making sure she stays safe, making sure that people like her? You know what I mean? But they don't. So you're just like, where did this come from?
I did like the callback, though.
What callback?
I mean, Siva with her lovely box of shampoos and everything towards Mouse. And all I could think was, but that's my special soap.
It's Sandra. It's too much like Sandra.
Cute, though. I did like it.
She's willingly sharing, though.
Yeah, the way she's explaining to Mouse how to take care of yourself as a young lady.
Do we think the reason why he was maybe so open to her about the reading thing is that he thinks she's Zandra?
No, he never wanted Zandra to know he couldn't read. Remember?
Oh, really?
He was like, Ryan, he's like, Ryan, you gotta write my vows. I don't want Zandra to find out.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Ryan, I don't think Zandra ever found out her man couldn't read. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Like, I wish they'd actually explored why Siva goes from, I can't do things like this by myself, too. I'm making breakfast, lunch, and dinner for everybody. And giving the kids baths and putting them to bed and, you know, cleaning up after everyone. Like, I thought you couldn't do these things.
Doing everything Celine used to.
Because Celine does nothing but fret. That's what Celine does. She frets.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wish that, we explored that this is her, out of desperation. It's her protecting her place here and making sure everybody likes her, and then Lex doesn't abandon her.
That leads us to our final thoughts of the episode. So earlier, Java has a go at Ebony for not really caring about Ram and refuses to give her access to him, despite gaining the ear from Ram as a result of her decision. After Ram does become ill, Java attempts to rescue a captured Jay by offering him help in return for revenge. But Jay walks away from her, leaving her threatening an expensive lesson. So yeah, what do you make of Java's motives in all this and her threat to Jay?
Well, I like the way, just going back a step, that Ved and Java both save Jay in this moment, but for different reasons. I think that's really interesting. Obviously, Ved saves him because he's his brother. But Java, again, sees an opportunity to use him against Ebony because, like, the only thing that Java really thinks about every single moment of the day is how to get one up on Ebony. We know that now. And I just think that's really interesting.
I think the moment between Java and Ebony and Ram could have been so good if they'd kept the through line that Java is genuinely in love with Ram. It doesn't work, though, because this girl has been okay with him blowing up. She's been making moves on Jay. She's all over the map. So it's like, what are her freaking motives? Like, it's like, Megan is playing this as a woman who genuinely loves her husband and is frustrated that instead of being in love with her, he's in love with every other woman who doesn't love him back. And how much that hurts, how heartbreaking that is for her. She is trying to protect him. She's trying to keep him alive. For once, she's not keeping Ebony away because she's jealous, but because you're dangerous to the man I love, and he doesn't appreciate it. Even Ebony's saying, yeah, but he doesn't love you. He's in love with me. How hurtful that would be if her storyline made a lick of sense.
Yeah.
But instead, it's just empty. Megan is playing it so well. She's playing it so well. In that moment, I believe she loves this man. I ignore everything else in this season. She is painfully, long-sufferingly in love with Ram. And she's the one wife he's not in love with. And she wants to just keep him alive. And he doesn't appreciate that. You know, like, that doesn't work. Because I don't know if she's in love with him. The story doesn't know if she's in love with him. She's in Jay one scene. And, oh my gosh, it's so maddening. As for why she lets Jay go, I'm a little confused. Because I am confused about what comes next. The order of things, like, I know the general idea. I know that at some point, Jay is going to be made enemy number one in the game and have everyone else in the city coming after him. But I can't remember if that happens before or after he and Ebony make up and she has to torture him. Like, I can't remember the details. So I'm just kind of like, why did she let him go? I don't remember what's next in this plan. I don't remember what her revenge is supposed to be.
I don't get why she let him go.
At this point in time, we do know that C knows that Ram plans to make him public enemy number one, and that probably can't be good for Jay.
Right, I thought that the reason she swooped in is because she knew that was what Ram wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I was like confused because one minute he like sees him, those were his last words, and I'm like, okay, but then she catches him in the hallway and says, let him go, and she lets Jay go, and I'm like, what's the revenge? I can't remember what happens next. So remember. So no, I don't know why she lets him go because I literally can't remember what happens.
She lets him go because simply Jay has to be released. He cannot be. No harm can come to him. He's Teflon. He has the plot armor. So that's why she lets him go. That's the motivation, is the plot armor. It's compelling her to free him.
And she knows fully well Jay would never make it on his own.
I genuinely had to think, because I don't know what happens next either. And I was like, so, like, could any of those technos cannot just turn around and say, she let him go? Like, I don't understand. He was supposed to be captured.
I'm telling you, next week, I'm going to watch the episode and then be like, that's when I'll know whether this makes sense or not. Like, that's when I'll know. But at the moment, I can't tell you. Yeah, I have no idea if it makes sense if she let him go.
Right.
If it's the plot, it needs to be released, or if there was actually, I'll know next episode. I'll come back to it. I'll touch up on these notes next week. So I'll either be like, oh, okay, this is what she let him go, or I'll be like, a little bit of cringe. Why did she let him go? Then. Oh, man.
Alright, cool. That rings Series 4, Episode 38 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel. And you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 39. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.